Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:30 in the morning. We have some breaking news.
And now, breaking news.
As best as we can tell, we've gone back into the annals of the history of the Winnipeg Jets, and not once have they played the Boston Bruins on New Year's Eve.
88, 89, 90, 91, 92. Apparently as close as we could get was December 29th. In what year, Tim?
93.
December 29th, 1993, the Winnipeg Jets played the Boston Bruins.
So the annual Boston Bruins Winnipeg Jets New Year's Eve game apparently did not ever happen.
We're not sure that, yeah, we're not sure what happened there, when that was created. We have the one and the only Ezra Ginsberg back in studio after the
lockout. First off, why are you locking me out of the studio?
Forget the NFL lockout. This is a real lockout.
We locked you out there so we can make fun of you.
Okay, so
oh,
hold on.
1995, December 31st, they played the Boston
Bruins. Okay. Okay, so 1995, December 31st, they played the Boston Bruins.
Last season. Oh, no, their last season.
Yes, they played
on New Year's Eve.
But why would that have been every year?
Okay, so I was wrong.
Their annual New Year's Eve game.
Me and Remus just did some research in the research at the research desk. Really, the R does stand for research, not Remus. But so it turns out that they usually played the Oilers on New Year's Eve, and they played the Bruins in the game before the New Year's Eve game. If you look back previous years, they always played the Bruins. So it was actually the Oilers, and so really what I said made absolutely no sense.
As long as you agree with that, because we certainly agree to that. Anyways, let's get back.
That's how you get a legal curve. We don't just give you comments.
Let's talk about the NHL, okay? Let's, you know.
When Ezzy makes a bold statement like that, we have to then research that bold statement and possibly rip him to shreds about it.
Let's get
on the air.
Let's talk. Forget about the return of the Jets. Let's talk about
your new
Jets
Facebook
return,
profile pic.
The Jets. If the Jets return, will they play Boston on New Year's Eve?
Well, I think in honor of Ezzy, they should, just so that he can say that. But let's transition now. For a little bit, we're going to transition to a talk about the return of the NHL to Winnipeg. We have Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution coming up at 11 o'clock to talk about, to give us an update on the ownership situation.
Why don't you quickly do an update of yesterday?
Well, that's what I'll quickly do, is the news broke late yesterday. The agenda for the Glendale City Council meeting that's going to take place this Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Winnipeg time. The news broke that on the agenda is a discussion and a vote about whether to pretty much renew the situation that they had in place this year, which is put another $25 million aside for the NHL to be used to offset the cost of running the Coyotes franchise in Phoenix, which would ensure that the Coyotes stay in Phoenix for yet another season while they attempt to find local ownership for yet another year.
Is this not the most preposterous thing you've ever heard?
No, it was the most preposterous thing I ever heard last year. At this point in time, you're in for $25 million. You know, you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar at this point.
The old investment theory.
Why? Somebody tell me. At this point in time, they're prepared to sink $50 million into this team.
And think that for some reason, a team will... it's been 2 years now that nobody's been willing to buy this team without... getting subsidized.
Yeah.
Suddenly now it's going to change moving forward. I mean, this is an issue for the taxpayers of, I mean, the American economy, and obviously Arizona especially has really been hit hard. But I mean, you don't wonder why the economy is so terrible when they're making decisions like this. First of all, to build the arena out there. Second of all, to continue to subsidize a professional hockey franchise.
That's right. We want to hear from you, so send us your tweets at Illegal Curve on Twitter, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, your emails, drew@IllegalCurve.com, and your phone calls, 780-1290. But if the city of Glendale's in for $50 million, and it sounds like this is going to, if you believe Councilman Phil Lieberman, and I don't, by the way, he says it's going to pass unanimously or by a 6-1 vote on
Tuesday
night.
He said he wants Balsillie now in this running.
Yeah, sure, of course. And I want it to rain Coke, but it's not going to happen. Coca-Cola, for the record.
Not Coke Zero.
Yeah. And, if they're in for $50 million,
yeah,
why don't they just buy the franchise?
It's a fair question.
Why don't you just buy the franchise? Pay whatever you're going to do and run the team. I mean, you'll realize quickly it's a fool's investment.
So, guys, does this, just quickly, Richie, does this mean that Dave's going to be posting Drama in the Desert for the next year?
Yeah, Drama in the Desert and Dixie, which is available daily, multiple times per day at www.illegalcurve.com.
Well, let's talk about Dixie.
Well, Dixie's where we need to focus our attention, Dixie being, in this case, the Atlanta Thrashers, and that's why we have Chris Vivlemore coming on at 11 o'clock. The attention for Winnipeg hockey fans that want to see an NHL team back here, and that's pretty much the entire city, more or less, has to be on Atlanta. None of these roadblocks are in place when it comes to moving the Atlanta Thrashers.
That's exactly right.
And we're going to ask Chris about that. But it seems like, you know, it was on this program that Bill Daly came on this program and said, pretty much shoveled the first piece of dirt onto the Thrashers franchise.
Yeah.
He pretty much said, you know, it's a bad situation there. The arena's in a bad spot. We're not that interested in keeping this team afloat. Guys, we have Zach for calling from Toronto on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Zach, you should be honored. You got the Hockey Show Hotline intro. That's How are you this morning?
Hey now, guys.
Hey now, Zach.
Hey now.
I'm perplexed this morning.
Perplexed is a kind word for it, I imagine.
Let's just ignore the, pretend that the city of Glendale is being financially prudent in putting up another $25 million losses. Let's just assume that's all good and well. What is the NHL thinking? And forget about just the business standpoint of things. What is this team going to do? Who is going to sign there?
Nope.
I just don't understand how they can continue to run the team for a second consecutive year and expect that, you know, the Coyotes fans who've been complaining for years that they want stable ownership, they're not going to buy season tickets with the NHL owning the team for another year.
That's right.
It just doesn't make sense.
What I want to know, it's a very good point, Zach, and we appreciate that, but what I want to know, from the NHL's perspective, it was reported this team in 8 months lost $36 million. Why is the NHL prepared to pay that the difference? I mean, Glendale only covered them this year for $25
million. Right.
Now, we don't know for certain if it's a blank check next year or if it's just a $25 million check.
Great movie, Blank Check, by the way.
But if it's a... it stands to reason they're at least going to lose another $36 million next year. Why are the NHL owners prepared to lose, prepared to pay $15, $20 million in the additional losses beyond what Glendale's prepared to cover? That's the question that I think the owners should be asking Gary Bettman.
Go ahead, Zach.
Guys, I'm going to go on the limb and say they're going to lose more than $36 million next year.
It's very possible. I mean, it's possible that the team doesn't perform as well as they did this year.
That's what I would think. Because there's no way they'll sign Brizgalov because, NHL isn't going to give Maloney a blank check to go sign him.
Exactly right.
And this team, I just can't see it being as good. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but it just...
And Yandel's an RFA, I believe, too. I mean, what does he get? Can they afford to keep him?
Yeah, somebody could sign him to a huge offer sheet, they won't be able to keep him.
Exactly Zach, right. I think what you have to look at here in Glendale is there's going to be the vote on Tuesday, and like Drew mentioned, it looks like they're going to pass it, and we're going to have a situation like we did all through this past year. And I think, obviously, it's clear that what they're going to do is restart the entire process. They're going to try to find someone else. So there's going to be Matthew Hulsizer 2.0. Hopefully, he actually is willing to
Forbes
put his own...
Forbes is reporting that he wants it on St. Louis now.
I don't buy that. I'm not sure if I totally believe that, what he said there. That seems
but, what
a little
if he,
bit
but if he is bailing out on this, then what's the end game?
Well, there's no other owner available here. Zach, we appreciate the call, but there's other calls coming through. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. But, you know, that's the question I have is, you know, if he bails, that's why the city of Glendale should buy this team. Though they shouldn't, but that's why they might as well. Because there's not going to be another owner coming out of nowhere. The only thing I can think about...
This really is the road to nowhere.
It really is. The only thing that sort of makes some sort of sense
Let's hear it,
about this. Sorry, Steve in Calgary, who just called in. We accidentally hung up on you. Call back, 780-1290. 780-1290. The only thing that maybe pops to my mind here is that the NHL wants this to continue because the NHL has a deal in place, maybe with some other city, to sell it for even more money than Winnipeg is going to offer them.
So you're saying that Winnipeg would pull over Atlanta and then they'd sell this team for more money?
Yeah. Winnipeg gets Atlanta for $170 million or whatever.
Might as well just give Winnipeg Phoenix and then sell Atlanta for more.
Maybe.
I guess NHL's benefit. No, good point, though, Drew.
Yeah.
Because if Atlanta sells, it's a private deal sold to the current owners of the franchise as opposed to this deal. It's NHL who gets more money.
Steve in Calgary, you're on the line. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Gentlemen, how are you doing today? I'm calling from Calgary here.
Well, thanks for listening online there, Steve. We appreciate it.
No problem. I was one of the first callers back when you guys went online, I think back in February there.
Okay.
This whole deal is just a complete slap in the face to Canadian hockey fans. When I go to a game in the Saddle Dome and sit in the lower bowl, my seat costs $162.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The same seat in Phoenix costs $45. Then when I get a little bit of hungry and I want to get some pizza and a Coke, it's $10 at the Saddle Dome and it's $2 in Phoenix.
Wow.
This is ridiculous. Even if Winnipeg gets a team, we're going to just be subsidizing these people to have free, basically cheap hockey in the desert. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree with you, Steve. That almost sounds like voodoo economics, and I'll let Richie jump in here. But I think when you're a Canadian hockey fan and you're a hardworking person and you're basically trying to get a ticket in an NHL Canadian city, whether it's Calgary where you are or Montreal or Toronto, and those tickets are hard to come by, and you're oftentimes, if you don't have a ticket, you're paying more.
Yep.
Whereas in the southern U.S.,
yep,
they're giving away tickets and inflating attendance numbers,
yep,
and really kind of making a mockery of everything, really.
Yep, like 2 years ago, I actually saved an ad that I got offline from the Tampa Bay Lightning, where if you brought in your phone book for recycling, you would get a ticket for free.
Yeah,
if you biked to the hockey game, you would get in for free.
And if you showed your Florida driver's license, you'd get in for free. I mean, they have all sorts of deals.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's basic supply and demand. I don't fault anybody for that. What I find, if the NHL is willing to offset the difference between losses and what Glendale's gonna
yeah,
actually offset, that's to me the most difficult part of this to comprehend.
And Steve's angry, and we're befuddled. But the question is this: why aren't the NHL owners?
I want
money out of their pockets.
That's right.
But the only rational way to think about this, Drew, is your suggestion that they have a sweet deal for way more money from an owner in another city. But how can they wait another year for it?
Well, you know what? It's a fair point, but that's just the question. That's the only thing that seems to make any sense to me is that
you have to understand the only reason most of these guys own NHL teams is they're for their real estate deals. They want to do what Chipman and Thompson are doing, where you bring a team in, but you own all the restaurants and hotels around the building because that's where you make the money from.
That makes good economic sense to me.
And that's the problem Bettman has, is these people in Glendale built this big building. Okay. Now how does Bettman go to, you know, a different city and say, build me a building? Okay. And they'll say, well, look what you did to Glendale. You abandoned them, you know? And that's what Bettman is. It's all about money. It's all about real estate. And I don't begrudge the Calgary Flames owners for charging me $162 bucks because I'm in a hockey market.
Right.
But you know what? When it gets to the point where you're raising my tickets so that I could pay to keep Glendale there in an artificial, you know, thing, it's just ridiculous.
You're bang on, Steve.
Steve, we appreciate the call. Thanks for listening from Calgary.
Guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Guys, let's go to break. We got more on this when we come back after the break. Lots of the rest of the show is going to be more or less focused on this. So we want to hear your calls. We want to hear your tweets. We want to hear your emails. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:48 in the morning. We want to hear from you. We're going to talk Return of the Jets for the bulk of the next hour and
the
a
Balkan?
Bit. No, the bulk of the next hour.
Sorry,
Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution coming up next segment. 780-1290. Area code 204-780-1290. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. You know, send us your tweets. Maybe we'll read them on air, just like we're going to read Aaron Ingram 99 at Illegal Curve. Assuming the city of Glendale covers Phoenix losses next year, what is the desire of the NHL's owners to pay another year of operating costs?
Well,
that's the question.
That's the question.
You know, it's one thing if the team lost $25 million. Then
who's making the decisions is the question, too. I mean, Bettman doesn't make the decisions in so much as he works for the owners.
Right.
So which owners are making the decision, or is it a majority of the owners, or is it just the core of the board of governors? Nobody really knows.
If you're the owner of any of the other struggling franchises, you own the Florida Panthers,
right,
you own the Columbus Blue Jackets, you own the Nashville Predators, you have to be furious if you have to write any sort of check to cover the Phoenix Coyotes' losses.
Right.
And, you know, so the team lost $36 million. The city of Glendale is covering $25 million of that. There's $11 million outstanding that, as far as I can tell right now, NHL owners have to pay for
now,
that.
Now, is that accounting for revenue sharing or not? I guess that's the question.
The team loses money. You have to assume that it's, you know, here's your income, including revenue sharing. Here are your expenses, and you're down $11 million. That's just, I mean, granted, we don't know that for sure.
But also, there's certain stipulations with revenue sharing in that if you don't qualify for a certain threshold of attendance, then you drop to 75% revenue sharing, not 100. And if you continue to drop down, I think you drop further year by year. Although if you get up to a certain number, you go right back up to the top. But there are stipulations involved. There's also stipulations in terms of market size, which I believe is the reason why the New York Islanders can't get revenue sharing.
Sure.
Because the market's too big, even though they don't have any attendance and they don't have it. You know.
Well, if New York's market is too big, why isn't Phoenix's market
too big?
Phoenix is the fifth or sixth biggest TV market. Yeah. It's got a ton of people. Now, maybe if they're saying the Glendale market isn't big enough, that would make sense. But, I mean, it seems to make, I don't know exactly how that factors in. But, it just doesn't make any sense. Especially, it's one thing when your losses are covered. When your losses are covered, who cares? Somebody else is paying the bill. But wait, I now have to write a check for $300,000 to cover these guys' losses? Yeah. Who's writing me my check to cover my losses? That's where I'm getting upset if I'm the city, if I'm the any other owner besides, in this deal. And they're going to do it for another year? Either they have a guarantee of a sweetheart deal somewhere.
Yeah.
Which they might, that we don't know about. They might.
There better be a guarantee, or there better be at least a prospect, because if there isn't, and they go through an entire year next year with this complete mockery of a sale, I mean, we found out earlier this week that, it turns out that the bonds haven't been on sale. No, I mean, thanks for letting us know about that. I mean, why aren't they telling us that this deal basically hasn't, there basically hasn't been a deal for the last month. There hasn't been anything on the table. There's been a threat of a lawsuit, and there's been nothing. There's been absolutely nothing going on. There is no deal. Matthew Holsizer is not part of this anymore. Really, let's be honest.
The truth is, Drew, is that, and you know it. I mean, Phoenix is what we're going to be talking about right now, and while we're talking about Phoenix, things are going on in Atlanta.
That's just true. If anybody in Winnipeg is apoplectic about this new agreement or this potential new agreement, don't be. Don't be. We'll ask Chris about it in the next 5 minutes or so. At the top of the hour.
Dustin Byfuglien doesn't play for the Coyotes, does he?
No.
Plays for the Thrashers.
Well, but unfortunately, he signed to a bad contract for the Thrashers, but we might have to put up with that. But,
Atlanta can move tomorrow.
Atlanta can move tomorrow, so don't be apoplectic. There's no reason for it. Our tensions need to be focused on Atlanta. That's all it has to be at this point in time.
And a lot of good players there.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're talking on-ice activity, and this is a lot of the conversation I've had with people, you explain to them, no, the team you want for a future going forward is the Thrashers.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Atlanta's old and everything else. We have a Greg
on the line. Phoenix is old.
Sorry, Phoenix
Atlanta's
is old.
Atlanta's full of young prospects.
Yeah. We have Greg on the line. Greg, thanks for joining the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. We can hear you, Greg.
Okay, this idea is a little extreme right now, but according to your call screen, it basically got shot up
What's the idea, Greg?
Okay, there's got to be a groundswell of opposition, and I mean really mad opposition to the point that, in the words of a quote from a famous movie, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Network, good movie.
Huh?
Go on.
Okay, and they need to be such a groundswell to the point that if this deal goes through, Batman must resign as NHL commissioner. This is basically, I will say, straight-up favoritism, and to go along with your comment of, what about the Panthers? What about the, I don't know how good the Lightning are doing, per se, financially, and
better now.
Nashville, Atlanta, Dallas. Put Dallas in the mix.
And Greg, you're right. There's a lot.
There's a shark.
Greg, we thank you for the call very much.
You're right. There's a lot of ownership issues, Greg, and they're trying to get Dallas down right now to a Vancouver businessman. You're right. And Tampa Bay had ownership issues where Adam Proto on Twitter yesterday tweeted that last year the Tampa Bay ownership was charging the players to park at the arena. So this NHL has created a lot of issues for themselves going back to the Nashville Predators purchase, with that whole money that didn't exist.
Yeah, when they had a guy with no money trying to buy the team.
Hold on, we didn't have any money, really.
I saw that Adam Proto tweeted that. So you're paying a guy like $4 million a year, and you're charging him like $200 to park? I got to respect that. That's pretty awesome, actually.
That's something, though. I mean, it really is something. But to Greg's point, Batman resigned. Batman's not going to resign,
first off.
Because he makes $8 million a year.
He signed a new contract.
Second of all, the owners seem to like him and then the job he's doing. I mean, that's the fact. Greg, should you be appalled by what's going on there? I mean, this is quite surprising. I'd be more appalled if I was a Glendale resident.
Yeah,
but you know, as an NHL fan, you have to wonder why they're continuing to foot this team's losses, and that's a fair question. And but at the same time, I'd hope to not have to talk about this anymore, and I hope to be able to move over to the Atlanta move, and I hope that we have some positive news in the near future to be able to talk about On Ice product, not Bonds and Moody and whatever else it may be, and what this transaction and. Or these transactions entail.
And Drew, I want to say quickly to Greg's call, and we thank Greg because he's called in many times in the show, and we know he's a big fan, and we appreciate that. And Greg, I think that he has a point. His Gary Bettman's leadership could be questioned. He's obviously the NHL has been very successful under his watch in certain respects, and unsuccessful in other respects.
Let me ask you this, Izzy, quickly. Let me ask you this though.
What are those respects?
With the way that sports moves, I mean, they've made a lot more money than they. The franchise value has gone up significantly, but isn't it that franchise value always goes up? You know, like
unless you're the Phoenix Coyotes.
I mean, look at every other sports league; all the franchise values go up. So, yeah. I mean, how much is different in what he's doing than somebody else? I mean, that has to be asked.
Well, yeah, everyone was sort of thought that the renewal of the U.S. TV deal had something to do with the delay, but that's done with. So there doesn't seem to be any real. Is it just stubbornness that's keeping him doing this?
Also, to Greg's point, there's so many ownership issues in so many different cities. I mean, do these owners even have a say in this matter when they can't even run their own organizations?
Well,
this is enough. I mean, Florida's a problem. I mean, Tampa Bay has more secure ownership now. Dallas is they're trying to organize a purchase from a creditor.
Yeah.
Phoenix is a disaster. Atlanta wants out. I mean, all of these teams, do they have any say? Do any of these owners have a say in what's going on, or are they so fragile looking to sell themselves that Bettman's making this decision with two or three owners like Jeremy Jacobs and a couple others?
Well, that certainly could be the case. Tim's giving us the signal. Let's go to break. When we come back, I think we have Paul Edmonds at the Gold Eyes Open House coming up. We have Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to talk about the Thrashers franchise status. That's the real important one. More of your calls. We have Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province discussing Predators Canucks. Lots more to come. An exciting last hour. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. On 1 hour to go, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. We're going to hear from Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution momentarily. We're going to hear from Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province later on in this hour. And throughout this hour, live at Shaw Park for the annual Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House, Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Gold Eyes here on Sports Radio 1290. Paul, welcome to the program.
Good show so far, and I'll tell you what, if I had my choice, I'd take the Atlanta Thrashers because I would rather watch Dustin Byfuglien play defense for the Thrashers than anybody on the Coyotes.
There you go.
Yeah, you're in the same boat as we are,
absolutely.
Paul. Now, personally, my most important issue there right now is I understand that there's free hot dogs to the first 1,500 people through the doors there.
Oh, there it goes. That's the door. Drew's left.
Yeah. Do I have enough time to get down there?
You do. It's right till 2 o'clock. You guys will be done at noon, right? From 9 till noon
That's
every
right.
Saturday. You'll be done. There should be hot dogs left. It's 1,500 free hot dogs and pop to the first 1,500. And you know, it's the old media credo, guys. If it's free, it's me, and I'll take three. But if you've only got two, I can do that too.
Hey, Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, will hear from you throughout this hour live at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes Open House.
Thanks. All right, guys. Yeah, talk to you later.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
And we're getting a thumbs up from Michael Remus in the other room. We have Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on the line, making Tim work this morning. Chris Vivlamore, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for joining us. Chris, let's get this question out of the way first and foremost. Is there a so-called Balkan, and if so, where is he?
All I can tell you is that all my reporting shows that there is not a person in line or very close to buying all three entities like a radio personality here in Atlanta suggests. So, whether he exists, whether he's considering maybe one thing, but far along in the process or even, preliminary stages of the process. It's not at that point yet.
Chris, what are you hearing about? I mean, there's some banding about the interest of possibly Tom Glavin wanting to put something together. Is there any truth to that? Or is that just kind of him throwing his two cents in but really not having the financial backup?
It's kind of both. He certainly wants the team to stay. I spoke to him a week and a half ago or so. He would hate to see the Thrashers leave Atlanta. If he can do anything, He hasn't gone as far as even committed he'd be one of the investors. But, you know, if he can get some folks together, if his name will help at all, he's certainly willing to do that. But you said, as a quote, quite honestly, I don't have the money to buy the Thrashers, so let's take that off the table. But he's certainly willing to do whatever he can to help them so that they stay. But that's as far as his involvement is.
Chris, if local ownership can't be found, is there anything precluding this team from packing up tomorrow and leaving?
Quite frankly, no. I mean, they're certainly beating the bushes. They're trying, you know, to find. They're working with some groups that are interested. But I think it's clear that they came out in February and they did again last week, you know, reiterating that there's a sense of urgency to find somebody. And that, if not, relocation is a serious possibility. And obviously Winnipeg would be one of those spots.
Is there anybody? I mean, Glavin wants to keep the team there, but he's not willing to put his own money up. You know, is there anybody that is even kicking the tires locally about keeping this team there?
Yeah, there are currently two groups. Neither are actually from Atlanta, but two groups that are, it's been narrowed down to, that have expressed some kind of interest to buy the Thrashers and keep them in Atlanta. But they have not gone past the stages of, you know, talk. They haven't moved to the more serious nature. And, you know, to me, it's just kind of any investor here in Atlanta is waiting to see what happens in Phoenix, because that's what's going to determine the price of this franchise. Right. You can get, say, $175 million from a True North and move them to Winnipeg. That would be one thing. But if Phoenix happened to go, what that does to the price of the Thrashers would be to drop it dramatically. So if you're a local investor, hey, let me, you know, if I can get them for a much lower price because the leverage is gone, then I'm probably willing to do that. So, you know, again, all eyes here in Atlanta still remain on Phoenix.
Chris, you mentioned the two possible groups interested. Are they interested in buying just the Thrashers, or is that the entire sports team there?
No, correct. They're working out with two groups that are interested in just the Thrashers and keeping them there.
And so, I mean, in terms of the owner right now, I guess the Atlanta Spirit Group, are they just trying to sell off the Thrashers so they can peddle the Hawks and make it a little bit more of an attractive package to buy?
My impression is if they got rid of the Thrashers, I don't see them actually wanting to move, to sell the Hawks necessarily. You know, that works. That's a playoff team for 5 years. I don't think it loses anywhere near the amount of money the Thrashers do. The owner here in Atlanta of the Atlanta Spirit part is the big basketball guy and is at every game. And, you know, he's certainly still interested. That he says, I'll take a back seat if somebody else wants to come in and be the majority guy. So I'm not the guy writing $20 million checks for losses. But no, my reporting kind of shows that it's the Thrashers that they want to move, or, you know, sell.
We're joined on the line by Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Chris, sort of talking about the arena there in Atlanta, you know, and how it relates to the whole purchase of the Thrashers and everything. Why would anybody buy the Thrashers alone and not the arena and not the Hawks and have to presumably pay rent for a franchise that has never turned anything remotely close to a profit?
Well, that's and I think kind of the linchpin here, but I think what they're offering is a pretty attractive lease rate that would make it feasible. If you got enough bodies in that building, you could make it work. You got to keep in mind that the Spirit own all three, the Hawks, the Arena, and the Thrashers. Mm-hmm. And because the bond of debt is what they really took on when they purchased all three of them, there's debt on the Arena. So all the money that the Thrashers make go to paying that debt. So why it looks like on the books that they're losing as much as they are. So if you're not now responsible for that and you get to keep a portion of that, then it does make it more attractive to you.
We've heard the sort of the pleas of desperation coming from the Atlanta Spirit Group as it relates to the Thrashers. If this doesn't get resolved this summer and in the hockey offseason, is there a possibility this group will just walk away from the Thrashers portion, stop paying the bills, and just say we're done?
No, I don't get the sense that they're anywhere close to that, and I don't think the league thinks they're anywhere close to that. I mean, certainly they don't want to keep writing these checks, but I don't think it's to the desperation point that, look, we can't financially continue, we just walk away. I don't think it's that point. I don't know for certain, and I might be wrong, but my sense from talking to the owners and talking to people in the organization, in the league, is that, you know, they're not at that point.
Chris, just moving to Phoenix, it's pretty clear that the NHL is doing everything in their power to salvage this situation in Phoenix. Yet in Atlanta, the NHL doesn't really seem to care or put as much, you know, put as many resources into the team staying or going. What's the reaction in Atlanta to that from fans and specifically, in your case, the media?
I think job number one for the NHL is Phoenix, and they've got to get that settled. So I don't think it's necessarily looked upon Atlanta as a second or stepchild that they're not willing to deal with. I think first you've got to take care of that situation. Now let's turn your attention. If it's Atlanta, certainly there are other markets, Florida, Long Island, that are not in good straits either. You're trying to sell in St. Louis, and up there are other markets like that. So my feeling is, and I think the feeling around here is, it's only concentrating on Phoenix right now because that's job number one. Then we'll move to Atlanta.
Chris, have you spoken to any of the players at all in regards to what they've been hearing?
They're kind of, I have spoken to a few of them. I've received text messages from a bunch of them asking, you know, what's going on, what's the latest. You know, their theory is there's nothing we can do about it. We just have to play where they tell us to play, and they have no control of it. I'd certainly management or the ownership's not sharing with them what their immediate plans are. So, you know, at least up until the end of the season, that was kind of their modus operandi, that they were just, you know, they were going to get paid to play hockey no matter where it is, and that's what they're going to do. And, you know, they really can't control where that will be.
We're in the time of the offseason where season ticket renewals need to be firmed up and sponsorships need to be firmed up.
Draft
coming up. Have you heard anything, about sponsors that are potentially pulling out because of the uncertainty, or season ticket holders who are not, you know, signing the checks over for next year's season tickets? Are they on board for next year, or are they taking a wait and see approach?
It continues. They certainly, up until the end of the season, we're pushing season ticket renewals. The issue more in here in Atlanta, as far as their season ticket things, is you've got to be winners, you know. And when you have an organization that has lost, you know, and not made the playoffs 10 out of 11 years, that's more the issue than, you know, whether they're going to be back or not. That's making me not, you know, not spend my money. So as far as I know, there have been no sponsors that have pulled out. The season ticket base is what it is. It's not a large one. But I have, you know, there's, you know, a segment that you say, hey, I'm going to wait and see, but not a large chunk that I'm aware of.
Chris, do they package the Hawks and Thrashers season tickets kind of like the Lakers do with the Kings and the Raptors do with the Leafs?
Not that I'm aware of. That you can get, you know, many different packages for each team, but there is no. That's a I think here that's kind of a, you know, two totally different markets, the basketball group and the hockey group. So there may be some, but there's not a great deal of it.
It was on this program back in November where sort of Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly was on. And he sort of got the ball rolling on the talk about Atlanta potentially being in some serious trouble. He mentioned that the arena is in a bad location. If this arena was in a more central location, could the Thrashers be a successful franchise?
I think they can be a successful franchise with the arena where it is. And again, it goes back to winning and your attendance figures. Yeah, they're struggling, but why are they struggling? Because you made the playoffs once in 11 years. In, you know, 5 years ago, I was here when they were in the playoffs, and they sold that building out during the regular season. They sold their two games out. There is a hockey market here. It's not huge. It's not, you know, it's not some of these bigger northern cities, but it's here. There's enough transient people. There are enough Thrasher fans. They're just tired of losing. And look at attendance figures in places like Boston and Washington. When they weren't winning, they were near the bottom of the league too.
Sure.
And that's where the Thrashers are now. They're perpetually there because of their on-ice product. But I may be a, you know, skeptic or looking at it from 1 year, but I saw it work once, and I don't see why it can't work again. I mean, that's the stadium is right in downtown. There is, you know, mass transit right there. Perhaps most of your hockey base is probably in the suburbs, and maybe you could do a little better if they were out there. But I don't see the arena as a major issue.
Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. We've asked you this before, so we'll ask you again. Who owns this team next season, and where will they be playing?
You know, just talking to somebody else, it goes, you know, with each day, my opinion of it changes. And now it looks like, hey, if Phoenix is going to get settled for this year and they're going to pay the $25 million to keep them there, then maybe this team does move. But I just, you know, it's one of these things where it just kind of goes up and down each day when you look at where it goes. It is getting kind of late, you know, to make this decision for this team to be playing in another city next year. But if you ask me right now, I guess I'm kind of leaning towards they may go just because of what's happening in Phoenix. But you know, one of these owners step up and they may, you know, make a more serious offer. Once that gets done, then maybe my opinion changes.
I lied. This will be the actual last question. Oh. If Phoenix gets done on Tuesday with the Glendale City Council meeting, and if they write the check for yet another year of losses or $25 million worth of losses, how quickly do you think Atlanta gets resolved, one way or the other?
I don't know, only because I don't know the depth of the talks that have gone on between Winnipeg and Atlanta. And even the league, I suppose, has got to get involved in here somewhere. I would imagine it's got to go pretty quickly, like I said, just to get this, you know, if they're going to move, they've got to do it soon, I think. And you're probably looking at some kind of conference realignment a little bit, aren't you, if you've got now a team out there. So, you know, I wish I knew something more. I think a lot of it depends on way behind the scenes how much talking there had been.
Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning.
It was my pleasure. I hope I helped.
Yeah, you definitely Absolutely, did. Chris. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate it, and all of Winnipeg appreciates it as well. That was Chris Vivlamore.
Take care, guys.
Take care, Chris. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Chris's comments. We have Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province still to come. Your tweets, your emails, your phone calls, everything. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes past 11 here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution giving us an update on the Thrashers' ownership situation. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available on our website, www.illegalcurve.com, and the entire program will be available for download on iTunes. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Just search for Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, click the subscribe button. It gets sent to your iPod each and every week. It couldn't be easier than that. Of course, also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. We want to hear from your calls. We want to hear about what you thought about the Chris Vivlamore interview, 780-1290. Guys, you know, Chris really said, you know, it depends on Phoenix on Tuesday night. That was more or less what he said, that nothing's going to happen in Atlanta until Phoenix gets resolved, which is what we've been hearing.
Well, it looks like Phoenix is going to get resolved.
Well,
if NHL accepts the offer, it's not going to get voted down.
I don't think so. I mean,
Little Logan has a lot of money riding on this.
Yeah, well, no, Little Logan has a lot of debt on his shoulders.
That Don jersey
is going to cost Little Logan a lot of money coming up. $50 million for a Shane Doan jersey.
Come on, Drew.
We know that
Phil Lieberman bought Logan that jersey. He saw Little Logan. You know, Little Logan was just walking outside of City Hall, and he's like, "Hey, Little Logan. Would you like to come into our meeting and put on this Shane Doan jersey?" It was oversized.
You couldn't have made that sound creepier if you tried, Ezzy, I got to tell you.
What do you mean? Why was that creepy?
It just sounded a little creepy there. He sees him outside. Anyways, not important. But Tuesday night is when it's going to be decided, the city council meeting in Glendale. You know, they've never made a prudent decision so far, so why would they start now?
I mean, it's what they call a gong show, Drew.
It is what they call a gong show, and I mean, I'm sure that thousands upon thousands of people in Winnipeg will be tuned in to watch what's going on in Phoenix, in Glendale on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be some disappointment, but There shouldn't be.
Drew, I want to say two things. One thing about Atlanta. One thing about Phoenix. First, with Phoenix, they've clearly been hitting the gong in Phoenix because through this entire ordeal, if they wanted to find someone, they would have done a little bit better of a job. Because as far as I'm concerned, now there has to be someone else ready to take the team. They're a lame duck team next year, as far as I'm concerned.
They were a lame duck team this year.
Whether they stay in Phoenix or not, they're a lame duck team because there's no way long term that franchise is going to work, regardless if they, you know, they end up getting past the first round or having a good team. This isn't Pittsburgh. There's no Sidney Crosby coming to win them the cup and turn around their franchise. They've already got the new arena. I don't want to hear that anymore. Pittsburgh needed a new arena, and they were in financial trouble. And yes, they did turn their team around post-lockout, but this is completely different. They've been there for 15 years. They haven't supported their team. They had a good team this year, and it wasn't until the playoffs that the Red Wings fans really sold the building.
And
this is not a shot to anyone in Phoenix. We don't have an anti-Phoenix bias. It hasn't worked. As far as Atlanta goes, I think once this is resolved and everyone knows this vote's going to go through Richie, we're probably going to find out something.
Going through me?
It's going through your law firm. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. But we're going to probably find out, Richie, that the entire time there has been negotiations going on in Atlanta, and that they have been ready to move for a very long time.
It's become a cliche because it's been said so many times by so many different NHL officials and media officials that, you know, quote-unquote, time is running out. But I have to say it's got to be a resolution within a week to 10 days, right?
What are you, Dreger?
Well, that's why I was saying that it was a cliche.
Even Dreger said yesterday nobody really knows on Hostel and Lawless. But the truth is, Drew, is we'll hear something on the Hostel tonight.
Yeah,
and
it's gonna be a good Hostel.
We'll hear LeBron sit there in San Jose in the same spot he's been for the past 3 weeks, say nobody really knows, but it has to be done soon. You know, we won't know until an announcement is made or not made, and we can speculate all we want. But the truth is that the closer we do get to June, the closer we get to some kind of resolution either way, or a year of uncertainty. But let's move on to, when you want to talk quickly about Vancouver Nashville before we, or do you want to keep on this?
Let's keep on this for a few more minutes, because we have Ben Kuzma coming up next segment, so we'll talk about that. I mean, you know,
what else are we going to say? Focus on
Atlanta. Sorry, we have a funny tweet just came in. Winnipeg guy on Twitter @IllegalCurve.
Yeah.
Maybe they can get little Logan a Coyote's backpack for all that debt he'll need to carry around for the rest of his life.
That's a great tweet.
That's pretty good.
That's
true. It's pretty accurate. I know you don't want a white elephant in terms of an arena, but at some point in time they have to sit down with an economist, a basic economist, not a genius.
Eddie Greenspan.
Yeah, Ezzy Greenspan. A basic economist to say what happened with the arena is a sunk cost.
It's not going to happen, Drew. We're talking about hypotheticals. That's just not going to happen.
It's amazing that they can be this... I mean...
They're too deep in. They're not... You know, this isn't exactly... I guess we could might as well steal the line from Seinfeld. These are the Lord of the Idiots here. So what it is. I mean, you're dealing with people who are too invested in it, and they're keep making stupid decisions. But that's not our problem. That's Glendale's problem.
Thankfully,
and we know what the result's going to be, and we have to focus on another team, and that's probably going to be Atlanta, which is probably what True North has been doing this whole time. And something's probably in place for that, and we'll deal with it when the time comes. Let's talk Vancouver-Nashville.
You want to talk? Okay, yeah. You want to get
a call about it. We can talk about that. Let's talk Vancouver-Nashville, because the series is 3-1.
Yeah.
And we've got Ben Kuzma coming up of the Vancouver province.
Did the series change on a Ryan Kessler on a bogus call? We haven't talked about that call yet. It was overtime of Game 3. Shea Weber got a bogus call when Ryan Kessler hooked his stick into him and did the old trick that everybody does. The refs, for some reason, decide they need to be part of this game and decide that they need to make a decision. And they call, and Sean Podine had a great tweet about that. Getting involved in Drew, if you can pull that up, you know, just becoming the story. And 2 seconds later, Kessler scores the overtime winner. I mean, is that where the series changed? For the most part, Vancouver has controlled the puck in this series. Nashville's not a great team in terms of offense. Vancouver is a puck control team. They've been dominant all year. Vancouver has controlled the play. They haven't had a trouble keeping leads for them for, you know, a large portion of the series. That's disconcerting if you're a Vancouver fan, because if you're a Vancouver fan, you expected to win the series. There was some trepidation about Chicago. There was an expectation about playing Nashville that you would win the series. Now, moving forward, if they do win, that's when the caution, you know, there's some serious trepidation, I bet, it returns. Because San Jose right now looks like a better team than Vancouver. San Jose has been a well-oiled machine for the most part throughout this playoffs. And there's some matchup issues that would take place there for Vancouver. But they should be happy with right now And fans should be happy, as you with the way Ryan yep. Kessler's playing.
Yep.
You hope the Sedin's turning up a little bit more. But Ryan Kessler, Burrows, he is your leader. He is your number one player right now. He plays in all situations. He's taken a burden. He's shouldered the burden of not having Manny Malhotra there playing even tougher minutes. He is, right now, their Conn Smythe winner if they are win at all.
Here's the tweet from Sean Podine that you were talking about. Congrats to the ref who decided the Vancouver-Nashville game. You are the first star for lack of accountability. A great game ruined.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a terrible call. It was an absolutely terrible call. There's no other way to say it.
I wonder, was it the close ref or the back ref who made the call?
Who cares? Who cares?
Well, because if it's the close ref, you know, I think his angle was probably obstructed by the body, so he couldn't see it fully. And it probably looked like a hook to him. If it's the back ref, he's too far away to actually be making that call and being accurate about it.
Drew, I think, though, with...
They're damned if they do and damned if they don't.
What Richie's trying to
basically say
is it doesn't really matter. It really is moot. It was a bad call. But I see where you're going with that, Drew. It does kind of change your perspective. But Ryan Kessler, you know, he pulled out a... whether you want to put it on him or the ref or whatever, the fact is in game four, he scored just an absolutely beautiful goal, and he has elevated his game.
Oh, yeah,
and he's
absolutely.
He's their leader now. Whether or not he wears the C, you know, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
But Vancouver has to be pretty happy. What was going on earlier in the series with the Halaschuk goal and that loss? The series was tied. The last two games have been. They have to be pretty happy that they're going to be able to close it out tonight.
If Vancouver wants to win the Stanley Cup, if they expect that they're a Stanley Cup contender and a potential Stanley Cup champion, you take care of business on home ice tonight.
Yep.
Period.
And just in terms of sustainability moving forward, I mean, you don't want it to tire. That's two more flights. That's more, you know, two more flights.
Another game.
That's one under the maximum amount of games at minimum that you're playing, right?
Right.
You might lose in Nashville.
Yeah.
So it's one under the minimum maximum amount of games you could be playing. That teams don't succeed well to succeed really. I don't think anybody's. I like to see the stat on that. I don't have it in front of me, but I like to see the stat on that in terms of playing that many games early on.
If you win tonight, you get probably at least. 4 days off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean,
that series starts Wednesday?
You would at least play Wednesday, that's right.
Those are four big days when you come to playoff time.
Three.
Well, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday, yeah. Okay, yeah, you might play Wednesday. Who knows? But with the NHL schedule, sure. They might play next Friday.
Big 3 days off is a bit, a lot in the playoffs.
Absolutely, especially if San Jose is going to take care of business tomorrow night.
And Vancouver's not the youngest team around.
No. Anytime you can get, you don't think Tampa and Boston are very happy to be sitting around sort of getting a little bit healthier right now? Yeah. For the record, it's been confirmed Bergeron concussion probably out for at least the first few games of the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's awful.
Not good news. He's a heck of a hockey player, and they will miss him.
Not good news for his life. He's the guy with concussion problems. Guys, let's go to break. When we come back, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, Paul Edmonds live at the Gold Eyes Open House. Lots more to come. 30 minutes left.
I'll have to ask Paul if there's any hot dogs left.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew's crying.
I'm not crying. That's not the case at all. Welcome back to the show. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, live at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes Open House.
1978 was the year that tune came out, by the way.
Oh, I was 35 then.
I was about 11, I think. But I loved my Van Halen through the 80s, I can tell you that for sure.
Great.
I'll tell you what, we'll play a little Van Halen here. We'll play all sorts of tunes over the course of the next few hours, 11 till 2. You know, it's the open house here. It's the annual event. The team is working out on the field as we speak. Should let you know that it's free. The hot dogs are free for the first 1,500. You also get a pop. Also an opportunity to see some of the new promotions the Gold Eyes will have on the field. And as I mentioned, the team is working out. They're a little tired today, guys. The bus broke down in Fargo last night on the way home. Apparently the headlights weren't working. And a very funny Facebook message from Zach Baldwin, who said, if we don't make it, I love you all, on his Facebook post. So anyway, I guess it cost them about 5 hours. They didn't get in until 2 o'clock this morning, and that was after pulling out of the Twin Cities. 80s yesterday at 2 in the afternoon.
Wow.
So
wow.
They'll work it out here today, and this is kind of a big weekend, too. Not only is the open house going on, but Rick Forney's got to submit his roster by noon on Monday. So there'll be some paring down of a few players here for sure over the course of the workout today and tomorrow as well. But come on down free. We're here till 2 o'clock. Love to see you out. And the rain has held off so far. Should be a very nice afternoon. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Paul. We'll talk to you in a little bit. I believe we now have on the line from the Vancouver province, Ben Kuzma. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, good morning. How are you?
We're doing very well, Ben. Appreciate you joining us bright and early there on the left coast of Canada.
Well, it's early. It's not bright.
Oh.
It's somebody's building an ark across the street, and it's been raining here since, well, I don't know,
well,
November.
Our rivers are flooding, so if you can send the ark down, we'd appreciate that also.
Well, yeah, you know, we'll just put one on the old CN rail, and it should be there in about 2 days.
There you go. Perfect. Sounds good. I'll just hold on to this dinghy for a little while. Ben, you know, game five tonight in Vancouver, we've seen Ryan Kesler really dominate the series for the first four games. Is he the unofficial captain of the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I would say unofficial. I mean, there are a lot of leaders in the room. I think Ryan, a lot of his leadership is probably by his performance on the ice. I think he's in that middle core group that's been around for about 5 years that is trying to take the team to the next level. But I think that the difference in that locker room is transcends on the ice. And I think what's happened in this series, unlike the Chicago series, is that, you know, the Predators, they don't have that nuclear weapon.
Right.
You know, they don't have the line, or they don't have the guy that's going to come through and then score the big goal. You know, it's a Matt Halaschuk. It's somebody. It's a grinder. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike Fisher, who had 6 points in the Anaheim series, his line has nothing.
Right.
Leguan's line has been very quiet outside of Joel Ward. You can't find Kostitsyn. I know from Kesler, on a personal basis, he loves the matchup with Mike Fisher. If he's not the Selke Trophy winner, there needs to be an investigation, because what's happening is he's generating all his offense on the transition. And you saw in the power play winner where it wasn't just the goal, guys. It was the way he drew the penalty. Suter, and, you know, utter frustration, kind of just manhandled him from behind. The utter frustration of trying to control this guy, and to be able to take a pass at speed like that from Henrik Sedin and split two D-men and let go what is fast becoming probably one of the best wrist shots in the league, just kind of spoke to what he's done in this series.
Ben, you mentioned Henrik Sedin, but the Sedins as a whole, do you think that they're deserving of, I guess, the criticism they were, you know, getting at least up till past game or two?
Well, you know, it's always going to be a thing in this marketplace that, you know, you can win your Art Ross trophies and you can, you know, be a winner of a heart and up for a heart. It's what you do now. And wrongly or rightly, that's always going to be a focus in this marketplace. And what's happening in the postseason here, I thought they were much better collectively in the last game, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you've noticed a real difference in their performance level. And rarely do we ever say that, you know, Henrik is struggling and Daniel isn't. They're usually a mirror image of each other. And, you know, there was some revealing footage a couple of games ago where Henrik seemed to be bothered by something, whether it's a hip problem or a leg problem. And, of course, he's not going to talk about it. There's a lot of guys who are playing through injuries right now. But I thought Henrik was better last game, getting more involved. And this is why you have to finish off these series as quick as possible. If he's got something that needs treatment and they can get a few days off and the Wings and Sharks can keep beating each other up, then they'll be better for it. But no, Henrik's bothered by something, and they're always going to be under the microscope here. They've got to get, when you don't get past the second round in Vancouver, you know, only twice in franchise history, it's always going to be a big deal, and it's always going to be a big deal when your big guys don't get you there.
Ben, do you think the Canucks are mentally tougher after what they went through in the first round against Chicago?
No question. I think they're mentally tougher from the last 2 years of what they went through with Chicago. To a man, they admitted when they were up 3-0 that, you know, they kind of took the foot off the gas.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out firsthand what happens when you let somebody off the mat. I mean, you leave yourself open to injury, and Sammy Salo got hurt in that series. And, you know, some indifferent play, some self-doubt creeps in, and the next thing you know, you find yourself up against the ropes. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. That game seven here, the Canucks went from a situation where everything, I mean, everything would have been examined if they lost that series, in the sense of this roster that, you know, you've got some guys committed to very affordable long-term deals. But if you can't win with these guys at this time of year, what good are those deals? What's going on with the coaching? Alain Vigneault probably would have been fired. They would have had to take a hard look at the way they're running their team. Yet they get over that hump, and away they go. And this is not unusual. I mean, how many Stanley Cup champions or teams at least make the final have barely got out of that first round, and then they seem to catch their game, and away they go. And this team reminds me a lot of teams in the past who've gotten out of that first round, and away they go.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. Ben, you know, it can be argued that Keith Ballard is more talented than a number of the defensemen the Canucks are currently starting. Yet, night in, night out, these playoffs, he's a healthy scratch for the Canucks. What's gone wrong with him in Vancouver this year?
Well, I would say what's gone wrong is probably it started in the off season. He had off season hip surgery, and he spent a couple of months on crutches, so he was slow to come around. He was horrible in the preseason. They wanted to pair him with Bieksa, and it just never worked. And he got off to a slow start. He had a concussion, and he missed 5 games. And I was on an Eastern swing in November where he was scratched for 4 consecutive games, mm-hmm. the first time in his entire career. This is a guy who's, you know, Mr. Durable. He never missed games at all. And he never seemed to get his game in order. And they have, you know, so many options on the back end. And through injury and indifferent play, he'd be in and out of the lineup. But I think what's happened in the postseason, Alain Vigneault for, you know, in a national series, seems to like a size element that Aaron Rome brings, although you're looking at a guy who probably has a fraction of the skill that Keith Ballard has. And now you've got Sammy Salo back in the lineup, so that third pairing of Salo and Rome doesn't play as much, yet you've got the stability in a Salo who's also playing hurt, who can at least make the smart play, get the puck out of your zone. And I think having two bigger guys on the back end is going to help them. But what's going to hurt them is, you know, this is a back burner issue right now. Nobody's really going to talk about it. But let's be honest, when the playoffs are over, you got a $4.2 million guy for the next 4 years. If he's not playing in the playoffs, he's got no market value. So you're, you know, stuck, for lack of a better term, with Keith Ballard. How are you going to move him? Suddenly that trade with Florida that was seemed so one-sided, and with Michael Grabner ending up on Long Island through waivers, looks very lopsided right now. So that's a problem that they're going to have to deal with in the offseason.
Sure does, especially the way Grabner. Yeah, I mean, Grabner really, you could argue should be winning the Calder Trophy this year. And that's
well, you know, the funny thing is, I mean, there's two schools of thought on Michael Grabner. It's that, you know, how would he look on the top six in the Canucks right now? You know, great, but you could also say he went to Long Island. He's playing in a low-pressure situation where the bar is probably lower on a younger team where he's getting a tremendous amount of ice time. But then again, he was scoring his goals at even strength,
right.
Not a lot of them on the power play. He's even scoring shorthanded goals. So there's a lot of debate in this marketplace about, okay, Mason Raymond seems to get as many chances as humanly possible to keep playing your top six mix. How would Michael Grabner look there right now? So, you know, these are things that you think about, but you know, the other side of all that is that the Canucks made a couple of very astute moves at the trade deadline. I'm getting, you know, Higgins and LaPierre, you know, a couple of guys who people went, yeah, you know, okay, we get it. You need the depth. But through, you know, injury, you know, the Malhotra injury and indifferent play, Higgins is having a great postseason with 3 goals and 2 game winners. LaPierre is winning a lot of important draws as a third-line center. So they've made the moves. They've always had the depth here all year, and I think that's what's getting them through this series. But they've also made some pretty smart moves.
Do you, looking forward a little bit, just staying with the defense, Ben, do you worry at all about, you know, you talked about Aaron Rome and Sammy Sell, whatever it may be. What about the matchup next round when we're talking about teams that are, you know, deeper than Chicago was up front this year, three lines deep that can score? Is that a concern for this organization?
Well, I think no matter, you know, if they get through, no matter who they play, I mean, the problem with, you know, San Jose is going to be a size issue, is going to be a compete level issue, and that's why if they play the Sharks, you probably wouldn't see Ballard again. We know what the Sharks are all about. It's, you know, it's one of those scenarios where you have to learn how to lose before you learn how to win. And when, you know, when Gentleman Joe Thornton decides he's going to play,
right,
and then, you know, Patrick Marleau wakes up, they're a beast. And, you know, Todd McClellan, who was an assistant all those years in Detroit, it's taken years for him to get that basically Detroit mentality ingrained into the Sharks, and maybe they finally have it. That would be a very tough series for the Canucks in the sense that, you know, you talk about the Canucks' back end. What's really different about the Sharks is their back end. You know, these guys like Demers and Murray, they used to be very vulnerable in the back end, and they've got guys who not only can move the puck, they're a lot better in their own zone. So that would be a very tough series. And, of course, you know, Detroit's Detroit. I mean, if the Wings somehow pull this off, it's hard to beat a team when you don't have the puck. It's obviously the best puck possession team in the league, but I think the Canucks personally would like to see those two go seven and probably play the Wings. They think they match up better against them.
And we talk about the questions on the back end, but we also talk about the strength. One of the players who, you know, we've seen in Winnipeg, I saw Winnipeg play quite a bit, and now really, really, really coming into his own is Alex Edler. How good is this defenseman right now?
Well, he's good in the sense that, you know, his body's kind of, you know, his legs have caught up to his body. He's always been kind of a big guy, you know, with the spindly legs. But I think what's happened here in the down the stretch and into the postseason is, you know, he had lower back surgery and missed the last couple of months. And, you know, you come back from that kind of surgery, and initially you're playing a lot on adrenaline. And then what kicks in is the fact you haven't played for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a real discrepancy in his play from game to game. But he's a horse, and he's... If he can stay healthy, we've seen in the postseason how well he can play a guy physically and move the puck well. He's got a booming shot if he can ever get it under control.
Built like a truck, too.
Yeah, he's huge, and he's built like a truck. And like I said, if he can stay, that's a tough lower back disc surgery. That's tough to come back from and not have the offseason to rehab that injury. But he's been good one game and okay the next. But in terms of this team going down the road, he's definitely a top four guy for a lot of years, and they've got him locked up too. So there you go.
Ben, we really want to get your thoughts on Roberto Luongo because, in our opinion, people are very, very quick to give him credit when the Canucks are winning. And then on the other hand, when he struggles, people are very, very quick to criticize him and judge him. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because this franchise has really never had that. They've never really, you know, I mean, I guess you could go back to Kirk McLean in the 94 run and Richard Brodeur in 82, and that tells you a lot right now. The Canucks, they've never had the guy, and the funny thing about all that is Roberto, up until this year, I think, has been the guy, and there's been so much pressure on him, and I think Roberto didn't understand what the organization was trying to accomplish here this year, that he's very... he's very demanding in his role. He's strong-headed. He's bull-headed. He thinks he has to play 70 games a year because, quite frankly, that's what he's done in his entire career with other franchises. And he's always thought that, you know, even if I'm sitting as the backup, I have to be ready to go in. That's been his mindset all along. Well, here comes Corey Schneider, who can play in the league. I mean, a lot of us have known that for a while, but we really saw that this year. So what occurred this year was, a full-time goalie coach in Rolly Melanson, who refined both their styles, the fact that he doesn't have the captaincy anymore. He's working in unison with Schneider and understood that, you know what, gosh, I'm actually rested and I'm not hurt because I'm not playing 70 games. That has Roberto in a lot better mental state this year, and he's been actually with us. He's been easier to deal with. This is a different time of year. Suddenly in the postseason, Roberto decided he wasn't going to talk on game day skates, which, you know, personally, I don't care. But just don't say you're going to talk and then you don't talk like in the Chicago series last year. You change your tune halfway through. If you got a plan going into the playoffs, so be it. But the reason he's a lightning rod is we saw how good he was this year. I mean, you're not like second in goals against average, fourth in save percentage, first in wins for no reason. I mean, his style was more under control. But I think people are a little nervous when they watch Roberto because I don't know how many times he's already lost his stick in this series. It just seems that whether it's the pressure of trying to get this team to the third round or whatever, sometimes his game breaks down. But then again, you look at what he's allowed in the series, it's not much. He's got a great team in front of him, and as much as people talk about where's the offense coming from the Sedins, everybody seems to forget the fact that Canucks were the best team in allowing the fewest goals during the regular season, and that stuff does play out in the postseason. So as far as Roberto's concerned, I think his game is probably better than where it's been, but people always wonder about, you know, that next shot, or maybe not so much this series because I think they can get by Nashville.
Right.
But when you whether you draw the Sharks or you draw the Wings, you know, one bad goal, it could be the difference in the game or the series. So
right.
I don't think we're ever going to have our finger off that pulse. It's just the way it is with Roberto.
Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Take care.
Thanks, Ben. Take care. That's some great insight. First time for Ben on the show,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Yep.
So, some real good insight into the Canucks and everything.
Botch is busy on TSN, so he hasn't been able to come on the show, right?
Botch and I can't argue with the defense anymore because it's better than it was before.
Exactly. You guys can't scream at each other like you were able to do that. A moot point or a moo point?
That's a friend's joke, Drew.
I know it's a friend's joke. It's a funny friend's joke.
No, there's no funny friend's joke. I can't believe you dropped friend's line. Drew, you're off the show.
That show was so bad.
It's a moot point. It's a cow's
opinion.
How did
that show ever...
Let's go to break.
Oh, my God, Drew. I can't believe you're quoting friends.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final...
I'm embarrassed to be friends with you.
Boy Meets World. That was a show.
One final segment. Paul Edmonds live at Shaw Park. Cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Remember when Drew was young? Me and Laura had so much fun.
Are you going to Elton tonight?
No, I'm not going to Elton tonight. Are you going to Elton?
No, I saw him in Vegas. He's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know the song.
It's Crocodile Rock.
Man, I'd love to go see Elton John. I've heard good things about Elton John.
Amazing.
Like his
show
live show?
Yeah, he's
Is it like $300?
I don't think so.
It's pretty expensive.
Sell your BlackBerry.
Yeah. You already lost it once.
He's worth it, though.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad that we were able to make fun of me. I was concerned that we'd go a whole show without making fun of me.
Yeah, come on. We have a quota here.
Paul Edmonds live at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes Open House. Do you want to make fun of me?
Oh, how do I follow that? You know, all I can say is that's a mid-70s tune as well. And, you know, Elton John, if any of you have kids, and I know none of you do, but there's lots of people that are listening.
Not that we know of.
That's right. Somebody might be knocking on your door in about 18 years, yes. Having said that, you know, Elton John makes a cameo in one of the Bob the Builder DVDs.
Oh.
I know that because I have kids.
I would hope so. I hope you're not watching it yourself there.
No. It's all about the kids here, though, boys.
Paul, Drew is actually a very big fan of Yo Gabba Gabba, but talk to us about the Gold Eyes Open House instead.
Well, it's all about the kids here. There's free balloons for the kids, of course, an opportunity to meet Goldie, and it just a real good family atmosphere here today, and it kind of really kicks off spring, summer, whichever way you want to go with it. The sun has popped out in downtown here. It's actually turned out to be a pretty gorgeous afternoon, and we'll be here till 2 o'clock. It's free to come in. There's still hot dogs and pop available, and I would say there's probably about 300 people here watching the Gold Eyes work out and go through their paces here this morning and into this afternoon after that long night and bus trip and a four-game road trip that wasn't great in the preseason schedule. For the team win-loss-wise, they were 1-3, but at the same time, I think some very solid work and some very interesting decisions that will be made here over the next 48 hours. So come on down. Will you guys, when you sign off here in about 6 minutes, you're coming down, right?
Absolutely, Paul. Just a quick question before we wrap up our program here. Sort of the transition this year, first year in the American Association. We're used to the Northern League. You know, what can fans sort of expect from the new league? I mean, obviously more teams, so that's a nice feature. But is the quality of play going to be similar, or should we expect sort of a step up? What do you figure?
I think quickly, we got about 20 seconds, it will be a little bit better. The reason for that is there's not as many options for some of those high-caliber players that were released or didn't get jobs back in affiliated baseball. There's two options. It was the American Association or the Atlantic League, and sometimes you can't cut it in the Atlantic League, so the next best option is the Midwest here. So I think you're going to see a better talent ratio of players here and a better brand of baseball. Not as much travel, so better baseball come August as well.
That's terrific. Paul Edmonds live at Shaw Park, the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, and of course you can catch all your Gold Eyes action this season live on Sports Radio 1290. Thanks very much, Paul.
No problem, guys. Talk to you.
Take care, Paul. Let's quickly wrap the show, boys. Let's go to cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
I'm going to cheer the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they've done a fantastic job. Guy Boucher in his rookie year has really got the team playing well. Marty St. Louis, you know, we talk about Ryan Kessler, but I think if Ryan Kessler is, you know, the mid-playoff choice for Conn Smythe, then Marty St. Louis' name should also be up there, and he's number two or whatever. So good for the Lightning. They swept the Caps, and it looks like they're going to have a very hard test against the Bruins, but it should be a great Eastern Conference final.
I'm actually going to stick with the cheer. same, and I'm going to stick with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Cheer, Wayne Fleming.
Yes.
It sounds like he had successful surgery. Let's hope that it was successful. He can return to the bench and he can be healthy, and that's the most important thing first and foremost. That obviously has far more importance than the results in the playoffs, the results of his surgery, and let's hope and wish for the best for him.
Absolutely. We echo those thoughts. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers. I'm in a negative mood. I'm jeering Paul Holmgren, general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers. We talked about it earlier in the show. His moves and his refusal and the entire organization's refusal to deal with the goaltending situation cost a very good team this season, and the blame for that lies on the general manager. It's not the head coach. When the general manager forces untalented players upon a head coach, what can you expect? Paul Holmgren, you get my jeer, and I hope that you remedy that goaltending situation in this off season.
If they do,
watch out.
Yeah.
That's it for this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, thanks for joining us.
You guys won't be here next week, but you know who will be?
Ezzy will be here.
Dave Minuk and Leah Hextall.
There you go.
So tune in next week,
Richie
9 o'clock. And Tim.
Sorry, Tim.
That was rude. Wow.
That's right. Richie will be gone. I'll be gone. Remus will be gone. So it's you.
I might be after Tim throws me under the bus outside on Pembina Highway.
It's you, Leah Hextall, and Dave Minuk here next Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank yous today to Corey Massasak of NHL.com, Chris Vivlin more of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. Get it sent to you automatically each and every week. Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the Chris Vivlamore interview will be available on its own, separately, on www.illegalcurve.com. We remind you to continue to check out illegalcurve.com each and every day, multiple times per day, for the Drama in the Desert and Dixie feature. Until next Saturday morning, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 9, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.